Welcome back to the Paula Gordon Show. I'm Paula Gordon. Bill Russell is here. We are with Hildegard Westerkamp, who is a composer. All of these things you talk about with sound really come back to your essence as a composer, don't they?
Oh, yes, very much so. I just want to respond to what you said about the technology and me not being hostile to technology. I think I have a sort of a love and hate relationship to technology in the one way, and I think maybe that's the conflict of all modern people. On one level, it gives us a lot of things, but on another level, it takes a lot away. And I think in terms of the acoustics of most mechanical sounds, is they create a kind of acoustic space that is huge. An airplane you can hear over huge amounts of miles, and a human voice you can't. Now, that airplane also carries us from place to place, mm-hmm. and it's wonderful for that to happen. But I think it's very important to keep it in perspective and say, well, let's not overdo it, please. Mm-hmm. If we have so many airplanes, how are we going to create the rhythms so that people are not always exposed to airplane sounds underneath? And
those are community issues.
They are completely community issues, and have to do with the global and the village mm-hmm. idea, the mm-hmm. local and the global idea, that we somehow need to balance that acoustically as well. How much is the village of metaphorically said, mm-hmm. now the village invaded by the world, and how much does the village have the chance to retain its own life acoustically? That's not going to work if a freeway goes right through.
Well, and I will say one more thing on that. Exactly. As we were driving in British Columbia, I saw signs that says, please don't use your air brakes or something mm-hmm. or other, in places where there were no people. Mm-hmm. Now, I had to make the assumption that it was going to disturb animals in their natural habitat, and there are some responsibilities to the other creatures of the earth, aren't there, that are sound
sure.
related?
Yes, very much.
There's another piece of this on the technology. We have, in various ways, amplified our abilities. We can assault people with weapons. You know what Bill Calvin talks about, the ability to project force. Mm-hmm. And we also now have the ability to assault people with sounds. I can, you know, buy a fairly modest piece of electronic equipment and turn the sound up well beyond the threshold of pain. Mm-hmm. And I can do that to myself, and I can also do it to other mm-hmm. people in the community. You know, for all it's a wonderful tool, it also has the potential for abuse.
Yeah.
And it seems we've got some work in figuring out how to...
Well, I think it's with any new tool that we need to know how to use it.
Are quite new to the human experience.
Yes. And I think the sound technology and oh God, the internet, all those kinds of things, we just don't know them yet.
Yeah.
And speaking as a composer, What I do is work with environmental sounds. If I record environmental sounds and then use them to compose a piece of music, then I need to think about, how do I want to use these sounds? Do I want to use them in an exploitative sort of way, because they just become sound materials and people can say, wow, I like this? Or am I going to use them with the consciousness of saying, this sound comes from this particular place and I don't want to disconnect from that place. I would like the listener to know about that place. That's why I'm using the sounds of that environment. And therefore, coming back to what you said earlier, sound is about place. It's about locality. And when I record sounds, I also have a certain experience with that sound and the soundscape. And when I compose, that experience gets composed into the piece.
Mm-hmm.
So if I do a piece about a forest, I will compose inadvertently in a way, my experience, my lifelong experience with forest, into the piece. I grew up in a European forest and a German forest, very near a German forest, which is very different from the West Coast forest. There were deciduous trees and lots of songbirds, and here we have very, very quiet forests and a few birds. And when I thought about forest and when I was working with those kinds of sounds, I realized I was actually connecting what I read about forest in the German Romantic literature from the 19th century with the West Coast forest, where we have the cultural remnants of the native culture with their totem poles, and the tree as a living being. And So I suddenly realized as I was doing this, which I didn't really know I was doing this before, and it emerged as I was working, was that I was trying to find a kind of an acoustic totem for forest in sound. That was suddenly, I thought, well, how can one speak acoustically about a quiet 1,500-year-old tree? How can you do that? It's not possible. So,
but you found a way.
Well, some way, yes. I found a way. But it was interesting how that then connected two places for me, going back to my German background and connecting it to the native culture of how they live with forest and work with it culturally and in their daily lives.
And that connected you to two communities.
Yes, yes.
I'm just very struck how you keep, you have repeatedly in your writing and as we were speaking, talked about sound as essential to human and more than human community. I just think we've lost track of that.
Yes, well, I think that sounds are the voice of our society. That's we speak about ourselves through sound. So, like Schaeffer said in one of his books, he said, you know, imagine a person coming from outer space into this to this earth. What do they hear? And so, listening with that kind of observing ear, in a way, what are we in fact saying?
Yeah, and what kind of a world are we creating?
So when the Martians land, they'll sit and have long conversations with our refrigerators and our air conditioners and our automobiles.
I don't want to let the time pass without saying people tend to think that it is the words we use that are the most important thing. And I am increasingly hearing you and others say that the sounds themselves carry at least as much communication value and maybe a whole lot more, but I'll leave that for you to say, than the words, than the syntax,
well, and we've
than
also
the vocabulary.
I had experience with people with Alzheimer's, and what we found is that the symbolic capability goes away fairly early.
The specific words.
But the rhythm, and the tone that you maintain in the conversation for a certain, at least in that context, is all important. As long as it
you can communicate love and pleasure and comfort and calm
and anger
with no words, or the words become irrelevant.
Well, language is sound. If we listen, that's why radio is so fascinating, right? Because people have no idea what we look like, and the sound of the voice says everything. Now, children don't, and babies don't understand the words yet, but they understand the sound of the voice. And this is always fascinating to me, how babies and young children react to the environment.
But these are real survival issues.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, they listen and they make sound back to the environment. They experiment as sound makers with the environment. They become a dog, or they become a siren, or they become the mother's voice, or whatever. And vice versa, I think sounds are the language of our society. And the way I compose, I'm beginning to realize more and more, I'm functioning very much like a writer functions with words. I feel very much like I'm composing with sounds as if they were language in the way they're organized. So I want the sounds to speak. And that's why I never know at the beginning of a piece what actually it's going to be like in the end, because the sounds themselves are what guide me into creating a piece. So the listening that happens on the compositional level is 5 times, 10 times, 100 times as intense, listening to very specific individual sound qualities of, say, one raven call, because I hear it over and over again in the studio.
The bird, the raven.
Yeah.
Who is very important in the Northwest.
Yeah, very important.
And in many native traditions.
Of course, yes. It's a totem animal.
What does raven say to you?
What does a raven say to me? Well, in a way, it's to me a West Coast sound that is still, I'm listening to it as an immigrant. You know,
most of us are immigrants.
Well, it gives you a fresh perspective, though. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And it's a fascinating bird. It's a dark bird, and it has a wonderfully resonant voice. And I don't know all the various voices that the raven uses, because I don't hear it frequently enough in my daily life. I don't hear it so much in the city. So I don't actually know exactly what time of year and what time of day it says what. I don't understand the language all that well. So when I'm using it in a piece, this is with full understanding that I am in a way using it as someone who doesn't really know it all that well, but I'm using it with curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and it's a translation. I mean, it's yes. legitimate.
Well, and all music that is composed is that.
Hmm.
It is the taking of elements and putting them into a new context, yeah. a new arrangement, yes?
Well, that's exactly what, in fact, what I do with Soundscape. In putting it into a new context within a composition, people listen to it differently as well. And that's why it's so interesting to do this, because as soon as you put this kind of thing on the radio, or as soon as you begin to put it in the concert hall, people take an impression with them that will have an influence, hopefully, certainly has had on me, an influence on how I listen to the environment after I come back from that experience.
Part of the challenge for any composer, you know, A, the composition, and then secondly, you'd like someone to listen to it.
Of course.
And then presumably you have something you want them to hear.
What you're doing is charming. It's extraordinary. I found it was interesting. Within the first 7 seconds, I just entirely relaxed.
Hmm.
I was tense about things. Vancouver traffic is not that bad.
It's gotten worse.
But the sounds did something. How are people reacting? Are you number six on
with a bullet
on the Billboard charts?
Well, I find that most of the time when people hear the work, they really respond strongly, and most of the time positively. I find that when I describe my work, people look at me like, what are you talking about? What is this? They often think it's New Age music, that it's like water with flute sounds or synthesized sounds, because I say I work with environmental sounds. It requires the listening itself for people to begin to understand what I'm doing.
Well, Mary Catherine Bateson said something about participation preceding learning. And,
yes.
And you've got to engage in it before you can even have any hope
of
learning from it.
That applies completely to this, I think. And I don't think it has nothing to do with people not being educated or so. It has to do with the fact that the soundscape still, that type of listening, is really still very unknown.
And it has to do with focusing. And, yeah. and in a way, you're challenged by what you're talking about, which is the willingness, the ability of us to focus on sounds in our environment, because we've gotten out of the habit of doing that.
Yeah.
We're going to be back in just a moment for a closing thought before you two take off again. From Hildegard Westerkamp, we are in Vancouver. Bill Russell, Paula Gordon, that is I, and Hildegard Westerkamp, we're talking about sounds. And we'll be back in just a moment for a closing thought on The Paula Gordon Show.